Good morning to you. Okay, we're gonna dig into numbers one more time. Thank goodness, numbers is here for you. By the way, I wanted to thank Larry for his, you can see the front page of your handout. It's obviously a smaller version or a blown up version of portions of what Larry did last week. I want to thank him for discovering this. I went to the website that is mentioned here on the back of last week's form. It's also mentioned in your bibliography in the back of this week's form. So if you want to go online, it is a really cute, because they draw it as they're talking, so it's not like there. He's drawing it as he's talking, so it's kind of fun. But we'll go through that in just a minute. Wanted to also thank Lauren McGregor. Does anybody know Lauren McGregor besides you? No. I was wondering, I didn't know her. I got a card, got a really nice card from her the other day, and she thanked me for teaching Sunday school on numbers and for playing the organ, quote unquote, and participating in it. It was a really nice, nice card. No money, but a nice card. That was really sweet of her, but I didn't know who she was. I mean, Carol apparently was about the only person, one of two or three people in the church that knew her. She's from, where's she from? Far?
Southport.
Yeah, Southport.
Oh, Southport.
Over by
Wilmington. Down at the beach.
Yeah, she's a ways away. But I wanted to thank her also, if she's listening on recording, to just let her know that we appreciate her participation online. And sometimes, I guess, she comes here. So that's where the card came from. So.
She used to come here regularly.
Okay.
So when they lived in this area.
Well known from times past. Okay. Other things we need to be aware of or announcements this morning? First off, thanks for everybody being here. Looks like the cold weather's over for a while, so that's good. So we're still in numbers. And as you can see, I used Larry's drawing here on the left-hand side. Our lesson today is starting in chapter 10. So on the left-hand side of his drawing, I'm saying his drawing, but on the left-hand side of that drawing, you'll see it's 1 through 10A. We're actually going to be talking about 10B through 12. So we're on the right-hand side of that little drawing. But you can see the way it's been laid out, just like we talked about in previous classes, verses 1 through 4. That's the thing in the little black box, little black circle there on each of these pictures. 1 through 4 shows how the camp is set up with the cross, basically, with 12 tribes, and you've got the tent of the meeting, or tent of meeting there in the middle, and so forth. You can see the Levites are also around that tent, the priests. Judah is labeled out there, too. Then you've got verses 5 through 10. You've got the laws about the ritual purity. That's where the book of Numbers comes in. You got all these names and laws and everything about what's going on. Now we're getting up to chapter 10b. When they start to hit the road, Jack, they're going from Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. By the way, Kadesh Barnea, that's the way you pronounce it. And when it comes to pronunciations, I usually try to look things up. And I try to get a verbal pronunciation offline or online, trying to figure out how do you say some of these, because there's so many, especially Old Testament words, that can be nutty. And you think it'd be one way, it's another way. Kadesh Barnea is how that's pronounced. It reminds me of my old pastor. When we lived in Montana, we had a really good pastor. He had his doctorate, and he went to Trinity and the whole bit. He was really sharp. He and I were doing a one-on-one Bible study one day, and what was it? It was the word, what was the heat? It was the Greek word for woman, kenia. And I said it, and he looked at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, it's right there. It says woman in Greek, doesn't it? He said, oh, that's what that says. This guy has his doctorate, right? So he said, well, my roommate and I, we always just pronounced it guinea, because that's the way it's spelled in English. So guinea, like the guinea bird. And so I said something totally off. And, wow, made me feel so good. So you can see a little bit of history of what we're talking about from last week. We've got the blast from the past here. Last week we talked a little bit about the silver trumpets and the shofars, two different types of things. But the shofar is what this guy's playing in your picture on the top right. Basically a ram's horn, can be straighter, can be a little crookeder. It's usually only about 1.5 to 2 feet long. If you see some of those fancy ones that the priests are playing, that go, looks like a commercial for a cough drop. It's going all the way out, and no, that's not probably what they had back then. Even the silver trumpets that we mentioned last week were probably about 18 inches, 24 inches long, so about this big. By the way, speaking of trumpets, what is this?
Bugle.
Bugle. Everybody knows it's a bugle. 2 centuries ago, you wouldn't have known that. You wouldn't have known this was a bugle, because bugles really weren't too popular. They were still around in this time period, but they didn't quite look like this. This one has curves on it. A bugle back then would have basically just been this part, just like your bugle or your trumpet, whatever you want to call it, down in the middle of that page on the bottom right. He's playing a trumpet. It's about 2 feet long. It's a silver trumpet, so it fits our description here for what Moses was doing. It comes out to a flare at the end, and it has a place for your mouth to go. Otherwise, it's just a straight tube. And with just like a bugle, you can get about 4 tones. Wasn't that great? Anybody want to hear something? You can only play, this is a military bugle. This is actually a replica of what they used in 1850 when the bugle first came into use here in the States. So in 1850, they would start to play reveille or taps or whatever fit the chords of these old bugles. I think this is a replica. I hope it is. A guy gave this to me when I lived in Idaho. He's an old guy, veteran. He said, take this horn. I'm getting too old. I never play it anymore, and so forth. He's about to die, so, sob story. And so I took the bugle, and I looked it up, and there's a picture online of this bugle. It says 1850. But I'm sure it's a knockoff. But I hope it is. I sure feel bad for it. So, starting. By Jewish tradition, blowing long blasts were for assembling the people. Short staccato blasts were used in battle or to order the tribes to start moving. So we've got two different kinds of signals here, and we were questioning how do they know which one it is? Well, short blast, dot, 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 would be a battle cry, or let's get going, one of the two. Shofars, the ram's horn, were not considered musical instruments, but were noisemakers with the godly purpose of panicking the enemy. After the destruction of the temple, which was 586 BC, and the general banishment of all instrument music, the shofar alone survived just because it was not considered a musical instrument. It was a noisemaker. It was like a drum, basically. It was something to signal things. And these pictures, this picture here on the right, the one with the silver trumpet or silver horn, these two hammered silver trumpets of Moses must have been better, though, probably long and straight with a wide opening like a contemporary trumpet. So who's got 10:11-13?
On the 20th day of the second month of the second year, the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle of the covenant law. Then the Israelites set out from the desert of Sinai and traveled from place to place until the cloud came to rest in the desert of Paran. They set out this the first time at the Lord's command through Moses.
Thanks. So on the 20th day of the second month of the second year, sounds like sort of a story coming up here. So where are we? We're in the beginning of the second year. They've been there for a whole year, and they're just starting the second year, is what it says. By the way, the second month is pronounced ear. In our English, I-Y-E-R, ear, which is the combination of part of April, part of May. So it's springtime. This is the first time that Moses and the people broke camp and began traveling as an organized unit. So you can picture, if you have, whether it's 5,000 or 2 million people, whatever the number, you've got a big group of people that's going to start moving for the very first time. They probably weren't very well organized. I mean, they have the things organized on paper, but they don't have them organized as far as What do I do? How do I do this? What's the best way to do this? And when do I start? And so forth. So it was probably a short trip. They were constantly following the cloud of God. They must have surely felt that they would soon be in the promised land. Let's talk about where their goal is. Obviously, their goal is up here. This is the promised land. And they're down here somewhere. Why would Moses want to lead them this direction? Why? If I were doing it, I'd probably just go right up the coast. Why did he come all the way down here through the desert? One answer, of course, is you got to let this generation perish. These are the bad guys. These are the guys that are questioning God. Let this generation go away so that when the new generation comes in 40 years later, they can inhabit the promised land. From a logistics standpoint, why would they not come up this way?
Would it be the opposition of the people on the coast, the Philistines?
Yes, exactly. And especially the Egyptians. Egypt was the powerhouse of the day. And they had fortresses all along this area because, of course, they were expecting something from the sea. Especially Phoenician, their sea-going people. They'd expect something to come in from this area. If you were setting up your embankments, you'd want them right here. This was open territory. So what a surprise that would be if you have a whole army and they're coming up where you don't expect them. So it was actually a very smart thing to do on Moses' part. Page 2. 10 through 14. I think that's me. No. Well, the breaking camp. The order of the tribes processional was important. That's what I've got up here. If you look in your Bibles, I didn't write all their names out. The first one is Judah, and then it lists all the tribes. How do you know who's in which tribe? If somebody says, you're in the tribe of Judah, how do I find tribe of Judah? They've all got their banners, little flags, and they've all got them hoisted above their group of people. So Judah's people knows where they go. The next one, these are all tribes of Israel. You can see there's 12 of them. Then, between these two, you've got the tabernacle. So the people, and it tells who's handling what. It tells these people are handling the tabernacle. They're handling all the equipment, the big stuff, the tent, the poles, all the things that goes with this tent of meeting. Then you've got three more tribes with their banners. Then you've got the holy things, the things that are inside the tent, especially the Holy of Holies, which would be very well guarded. That's why you have these guys running front, and you got guys behind to protect also. This is the rear guard. So you've got these three tribes protecting the back. These guys are sort of sandwiched in the middle to protect all the good things. That's why you're traveling. You're moving toward the promised land. So the order of the tribe's processional was important. Each tribe had a responsibility in moving specific items from camp to camp. The holy things were some of the last to be picked and carried. This allowed for the rest of the camp's new site to be in place upon their arrival. Then chapter 10, verse 29 through 32, it's talking about Moses. He's trying to convince his brother-in-law. And part of the problem with Old Testament is that it's in Hebrew. And Hebrew, if you say brother-in-law in Hebrew and try to translate it into English, that's what you got. Guten or Hoten or Hatten. Or we, as English people, try to fit verbs in, or consonants or vowels in here so we can pronounce it. Okay, just like Yahweh. You know, we fit the E's in there so we can pronounce it. We don't know how it's pronounced. There's probably like Hoten or something like that. The trouble with that word, and this is going back to the Masoretic text, so you're going way back to the original text as much as we can, says that Hoten just means a family member. We don't know if he's the father-in-law, the brother-in-law. We don't know. He's family. That's all we can say. He's related by marriage somehow in this story. So Moses tries to convince his brother-in-law, father-in-law, whatever, Hobab to come with him. Hobab is the son of Reuel. And Reuel is also known as, where's my Bible study people? Jethro. Jethro. And is not an Israelite. So this guy is not an Israelite. Where does Jethro come from? He comes from Midian. Where's Midian? Well, we need a bigger map. Midian's way over here. Midian's over here. Where are we? Over here. Over here. The Gulf of Aqaba, basically, is over here. You hear about the Gulf of Aqaba sometimes with the Iraqi war and stuff. But the Gulf of Aqaba is that little finger of water down here. So Jethro, or Hobab, and family, Reuel, comes from that area. And that area is famous for farming and ranching, mostly ranching, sheep. They love sheep over there, and goats. And they are wilderness people. They know how to survive in the wilderness. Obviously, if you have sheep and goats, you're out in the field all the time. It's not like you're sitting in the barn. You're out in the field. And so these guys really know their stuff. And what does Moses say? We want you to come along. We want you to be with us because you know the territory and you've got good eyes. Even if you don't know this territory, you're familiar with how to find things. So Hobab is a very important person. He apparently has expert knowledge of the desert lands and the Sinai, but Hobab balks at the thought of continuing and even says that he wants to return, I put, to Egypt. It could be to Midian. We don't know exactly where he came from. But why go back now? They've been out here a year plus. Why go back now? Well, a desire to return to my own land and my own people, like it says in verse 30, basically he's homesick. Hobab's attitude demonstrates the traditional ancient Eastern pattern of adherence to family and place. That is Egypt or Midian, whichever it might be. Now, Midian, by the way, Midian, this is going back to the 14th century BC, but they had other gods, and that's one of the problems here. Hobab, desire to return, also means a return to his gods. Family gods were a big deal. If your family, my family, let's see, Bill, my family's not your family. I've got this pile of gods sitting over here by the fireplace. You got your pile of gods sitting over here in the patio. I wish I had a patio. Maybe if I take your gods, I can have a patio too. Let's talk. And your gods, my gods, they all interchange. Gods, gods, gods. Just like Egypt had gods, 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 and Greece and everybody else. There was no one god. There was a supreme god usually, but not a god, the only god. So he was kind of homesick for that too. His final answer is not recorded here. Hobab doesn't say yes or no. We don't know. But Hobab's descendants, the Kenites, are later said to be living in Canaan in Judges and 1 Samuel, indicating that he must have complied with Moses' request. Otherwise, he wouldn't have relatives there. Who's got 10:33?
I do. So they set out from the mountain of the Lord and traveled for 3 days. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them, then during those 3 days to find them a place to rest. The cloud of the Lord was over them by day when they set out from the camp. When the ark set out, Moses said, "Rise up, Lord, may your enemies be scattered, may your foes flee before you." Whenever it came to rest, he said, "Return, Lord, to the countless thousands of Israel."
So we've got Moses interceding for the people, asking for praise and blessings from God. This is their first time out, like we said. It's their first march, and ask God is with them. Now, in chapter 11, that's where the trouble starts. We just stopped right where we are. We're in good shape, but the complaints are starting. Day number 3, day number 4. You can see page 1 of your sketch. Your detailed sketch here on page 1 shows the complaints on the right-hand side. We're tired of manna. It was better off in Egypt and so forth. So there's Moses with his shoulders slumped and his brows wrinkled, and he's getting all the grief. These complaints began on day number 3 of their trek into the desert, and it makes God very angry. He sends fire, but then shows mercy after Moses prays. Tabera means burning. So we've got the word Tabera coming up in here, because that's what they named the place, because in verses 1 through 3, now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed, as we see above, to the Lord, and the fire died down. So that place was called Tabera, because fire from the Lord had burned among them, meaning burning. Verse 4, it's only a word that's used once, but it's the word rabble. The rabble with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, the melons, leeks, onions, garlic. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. Manna, by the way, if you translate manna into Hebrew, it means, what is it? Because we still don't know what it is. So the word rabble is describing these people who are discontented, implying that these complainers are not Israelites. In ancient times, a sign of God's wonder and grace was that he provided food for his people. The biblical view is that food is sacral. That's not a doctor word. That's a sacred. It means it's sacred. There are no common meals. So in other words, I'm just going to have a sandwich for lunch, okay? That wasn't the case. You had something to praise God with. That was the way you would be thinking back then. No common meals. Bland or not, these wanderers were spurning God's gift. Let's see. The rabble with them began to crave other foods. Okay, we've already hit that. One has to wonder how Egypt's slaves were able to have meat or fresh vegetables. Now, all they had was this manna. Well, back in Egypt, fish were able to be caught by the poor and the slaves in the many canals, but they really didn't have much access to fresh vegetables and fruits. That was for, remember who they are? They're slaves. They're slaves of somebody else, and it's the masters who controlled the food source. And so the masters got the goodies, not the slaves. Moses is hopping mad now, and he's also burned out. Who's got 11:10?
Moses heard the people of every family wailing at the entrance to their tents. The Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. He asked the Lord, why have you brought this trouble on our servant? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their ancestors? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, give us meat to eat. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you are going to treat me, please go ahead and kill me. If I have found favor in your eyes, and do not let me face my own ruin.
Complain, complain. Where's HR when you need him, right? This guy is shouldering the whole camp. No matter how many people it is, he's shouldering the whole thing. And he's burned out. We're on to day number 3, 4, something like that. He's already burned out. The Lord has a solution for him. God hears Moses' lament and supplies a solution, which is delegation in verse 16. You delegate these things. You get other people to do what you're doing all the time, plus a promise of meat. You can see the quail up there on the left-hand side, and more meat. You can see sort of a quail. Quails are getting kind of old here. More meat over on the right-hand side. They're getting tired of meat. Meat, 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 same meat. But the real issue here is stated plainly by Moses in verse 20 as he addressed his people. He said, you have rejected the Lord who is among you. It's not like God has been a straggler on this trek, remember, bringing up the rear or in a long train of sojourners. He's not sitting back there watching. No, he's been their leader, their guide, and inspiration from the beginning. These ungrateful people are living in the here and now. And if you want a modern comparison to what we just read, I would take that little one to heart. This says, after a person has made a commitment to follow Christ, he then says, I wish you had not died for me. Leave me alone. That's the same feeling that Moses is getting here from his people. Why'd you bring me out here? I was happier back there. What's the matter with you? 11:26 through 30 then tells of the two of the 70 elders. Well, you remember, I'm skipping a few things here, but you remember that Moses handpicks 70 people, 70 elders, to be this delegation. He's delegating now. These are the people who are going to help lead these people to the promised land. And he says, come to the tent meeting, the meeting tent. Come to the meeting tent and let's worship the Lord, get instructions from him. Well, two of these guys didn't go. They stayed in the camp. They stayed in town, basically, where the people were. That's Eldad and Medad. I don't know why those names are mentioned, except that probably, if you're writing this in ancient times, you don't want to say a couple of guys. I mean, that's pretty flaky. Yeah, sure, there was a couple. But if you have names, you can trace families. You know lineages. So if you know what their names were, that probably really did happen. So Eldad and Medad stayed behind. They are in the camp. They are prophesying, just like the guys in the tent, but they're in the camp with the people. They did not go into the tent of meeting as instructed. Instead, they remained with the people in camp. Yet the Spirit of God came upon both the main group of elders and these two as they prophesied. So how did Moses respond to these renegades? How would you respond? Let's start there. How would you respond? You got two naysayers over here. You got, 68 over here that are doing what you said. I mean, is this going to be a start of another rebellion? Are these guys going to be a troublemaker group over here? I think I need to get them over here. How do you respond? What would you say? Isn't that bad when I'm looking straight at you? that's not good.
Everybody starts looking down.
Yeah, I'm studying really hard now. I think from me, I would be saying just what I said. Those two guys are just sort of like the yeast that's going to sprout. It's going to be one big problem after another. We got to get these guys over here to the rest of the camp, inside the tent, to be with us. Moses didn't do that, did he? If you look a little further, like in verse 29, you see that Moses says, basically, it's okay. You can do what you're doing. You're prophesying among the people. That's great. Keep it going. That's basically what he says. He's a cheerleader for them. And that's probably, with that kind of attitude, that's why Moses is the leader. You can see in 11:31 to 34, the plague of the quails. Look down at your bottom, at your footnotes. Even today, the annual northern migration of quails across the Sinai Peninsula occurs in the second month of the Hebrew calendar, which is in our calendar mid-March. And you see it again in Numbers, or in Exodus 16. So, somebody's got 11:31.
Now a wind went out from the Lord and drove quail in from the sea. It brought them down all around the camp to about 3 feet above the ground, as far as the day's walk in any direction. All that day and night, and all the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers. Then they spread them out all around the camp.
Good. Thanks, Pat. Homers. How often do you use the word homer except in baseball? Huh? 3 feet above the ground. We don't know exactly why 3 feet above the ground, except that they're still catching quail in that part of the world. The poor people are. They catch quail. And the way they do it is with nets that are stretched 3 feet high, be about this high. The quail we're familiar with, you could probably kick one and it'd go like over there. It doesn't fly much. Different parts of the world have different quails. Quails in this area, actually, like I said, they migrate. They fly just like birds, and they are good flyers. They have good wings. The trouble with the quail is they're like a B-17 bomber. They got good wings, but they are bulky and heavy. And so they don't like to fly. They'd rather run. They can run pretty fast. They can go about 20 miles an hour up to speed. And so if you accidentally kick one, it's probably going to jump a mile high. You're going to jump a mile high. And then it's going to just try to scurry away from you, not really fly much. But these quail were flying. And if they were flying, they were probably low. So 3 feet, you got nets, you catch them, you just put them in your basket, kill them and snap their neck and put them in your basket. So how deeply they were piled was the other way you can look at that. It says 3 feet high, meaning they were so thick, they were 3 feet high. So we don't really know how that's translated, but anyway, there were a ton of quails. What's the plural of quails?
Quail.
Quail. Quails. Yeah. But soon a plague broke out in verse 33 and killed a good number of people. These greedy people were buried here, and the location was named Kibroth Hataava. Hataava. Kibroth Hataava, meaning graves of craving. Moses and his remaining company then moved from this place to a place of death, which is Hazroth. 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 Wow, these names. Now on the next page, you can see, pardon for drawing, we're talking about a little trouble coming up here. Well, you can see the camel also in your picture. That shows that they traveled. And in chapter 12, we come up with Miriam and Aaron starting to badmouth Moses because of his Cushite wife. But that's really not the correct answer. Let's see. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses, they asked? Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Lord heard this. So the Lord wasn't real pleased with that. Moses' wife, Zipporah, and Steve also says they used to call him Zippo, call her Zippo when he was teaching. But Zippo or Zippor is actually a shortened name for it, Zipporah. That was Moses' wife. Well, we don't know if she died. She may very well have died. Doesn't say. Because the way this is phrased, because of your Cushite wife. Well, that sounds like a new person. And besides, that's only a smokescreen. Blaming it on the wife is only a smokescreen for the real issue, which was jealousy. Miriam was Moses' sister. So you got a family feud here. Miriam, the sister. Aaron is Moses' brother, and he's also his right-hand man. And these two are teaming up against Moses. Verse 3 is probably a later addition. What does verse 3 say? Now Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. So it's probably a later addition because Moses is a humble man. He would not say that sort of thing about himself. However, the word enough can sometimes mean depressed instead of humble. It can sometimes be the word depressed. And if that's the case, and Moses is actually saying this, that could very well be true. He is depressed because he's taken on so much responsibility here. Chapter 12, verse 4, God rebukes Miriam and Aaron in poetic form. Who's got that? 12:6-9.
And he said, hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is entrusted with all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth clearly and not in dark speech. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed.
Just curious, mine's in poetic form. Is yours? No. It's just straight words. Okay.
This is the Revised Standard Version.
RSV, okay. And I've got the NIV, so different versions. Mine's in a poem, basically, that the Lord had. Well, this was Miriam, not Aaron, is cursed at this point with an instant case of leprosy. The anger of the Lord burned against them. When the cloud lifted from above the tent, there stood Miriam, leprous like snow. Aaron turned toward her and saw that she had leprosy. And he said to Moses, "Please, my Lord, do not hold against us the sin we have foolishly committed. Do not let her be a stillborn infant coming from its mother's womb with its flesh half eaten away." So Moses cried out to the Lord, "Please heal her." In 12:1, Miriam's name appears before Aaron's. Did you notice that? Go back to 12, chapter 12, verse 1. Miriam and Aaron began to talk. Miriam's name comes first. In this ancient male-dominated culture, such a thing would be considered very unusual unless the primary character in this sentence were a female, which she is, the primary instigator here. Add to this that the verb in Hebrew is in the feminine singular context, which confirms her leadership in this conspiracy. So this whole sentence with Miriam and Aaron mentioned is with Miriam as the topic, as the instigator of this whole thing. So only Miriam gets leprosy, not Aaron. That's another proof here of it's Miriam's. Just as in the golden calf incident, however, back in Exodus, Aaron shows a lack of spiritual backbone. Despite his role as high priest, Aaron is a tag-along dominated by his sister. Ouch. Leprosy. Talk about leprosy for just a second. Leprosy was a common term in ancient times for various skin ailments. You can see down below, number 9 down below on page. True leprosy, Hansen's disease, did not reach the Middle East until New Testament times at the very earliest. So this was something that looked like leprosy, and it looked terrible, apparently, white as snow. Based upon the description, it suggests a form of psoriasis, and chronic leprosy was never white. In any case, Miriam would be excluded from the community and from worship, and that is crushing news. If you're a member of the Israelite family, all of this is family, as far as you're concerned, and you are banned from it. That's terrible. You're out in the middle of nowhere, and you are banished. She is now a pariah, an outcast. Verse 13, at Aaron's pleading, we started reading that, at Aaron's reading, Moses cries to God to remove this curse from Miriam. She still must suffer public rebuke for 7 days, as prescribed in Leviticus. But this was probably the lightest sentence for such shame. It was also the standard punishment for touching a dead body. So if you touched a dead body, or if you did what Miriam did, had leprosy, you had the same punishment, 7 days. That's still a long time to be a loner. Verse 14, the reader would understand the motive of any parent who did this. What are we talking about here? Verse 14, the Lord replied to Moses, "If her father," meaning Miriam's father, "had spitten her face, would she not have been in disgrace for 7 days? Confine her outside the camp for 7 days, and then she'd be brought back in." So that's, what are we talking about? If her dad had spitten her face, that was a common thing to do as a sign that you are totally disgusted with your child. Hold them up, spit in their face. And that was humiliation at its worst.
Would be today, too.
It would be today, too. And as that kid got older, you may not want to spit in their face.
Not good.
Yeah. Oh, well, time to move on. The desert of Paran, that's how you pronounce Paran, will be the staging area for the long-awaited attack upon the land of Canaan. We mentioned it. They're coming up from the south. They're not coming from over here. They're coming from here. They're unexpected to be coming from here. And as they come up this way, they will probably not encounter too much of a problem. But their staging area is really right about there. Just right about here is where they are going to be encamped when we start next time. And I do hope you come back next time, because your tickets should be good for 2 visits to Numbers with me as your teacher. Any questions or comments about what we went through today?
I'd like to go back to the route that he's taking, okay, because I think there's another factor involved.
Okay.
We covered two. One is that Egyptians would have outposts along the coast, and it'd be more sparsely populated if you go further east on the east side of the Dead Sea. The other thing that I believe is mentioned is that God didn't want them exposed to the gods of all those people along the way. That it's going to take a while. They might intermarry. Those gods are there. They're used to the Egyptians with lots of gods, and they may be swayed in that area.
No, never thought of that one. Good point. Yeah, because everybody up here, we don't really hear it about much in the Bible, but historically, this area is loaded with people that are worshiping other gods.
Right.
And it's, like we said, very similar to the Greeks and the Romans. You had a god for this, a god for that. There's a god for this table. There's a god for the lights. You know, everything had a god. And it was up to you as the man of the house to decide which gods you and your family are going to worship. And so if you have that issue on top of it, you're right. Why mess it up any further? Good point. Anything else today? Yeah, James.
I think we know where rabble rousers comes from.
Yeah. Good point. I didn't look up the Hebrew word for rabble, but I bet it's not a good one.
Non-Israelites, but they were, you know, fussing about the food. So.
Yeah. Those were the guys that really weren't part of the Israel community. They were just tagged. Well, can you imagine? So you are working with somebody in Egypt. You are not the master, you're just one of the other guys in there, and suddenly you find out that these people who are called Israelites are moving. They're going to be leaving town. I like these people. I want to stay with them. And so you might hook along. And that's probably where these rabbles started to come from. Good point. Anything else? How are we doing?
Doing well.
I can't see with these glasses. Well, it's about time. Let's gather around. Thank you, Lord, for bringing us together again today. For believers of your word, and hopefully doers of your word, let us keep you in mind throughout this day and throughout this week. May we take the lessons that Moses gives us and the personal examples that he has given us in your word. May we treat this Bible with all due respect, and let us live the Bible in every day of our lives. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen.